Intervju Radija Študent. Lep pozdrav v intervjuju Radija Študent, kjer danes gostimo dva norveška improvizatorja, pihavca Frodeja Gerštada in tolkalca Paula Nilsna Lova, ki sta včeraj v duetu nastopila v okrilju serije Defonija v klubu Gronka na Metelkovi. Nocoj pa bosta ob 21. uri zvečer dejanje ponovila. Preden se spustimo v pogovor z njim, pa poslušajmo malo glasbe.
I'd like to welcome Frode Gerstad and Paul Nilsson Love in our studio. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yesterday you played in the same place as you did a couple of years ago, but in a trio who featured also a bass player. I would like to know, how do you reflect those three performances now in Club Gronka, including the yesterday's performance?
We can't remember anything of the one 7 years ago. But I mean, what we remember, there was a very good vibe in the room, and I, at that point, so we chose to ask Mihai if we could do a second gig.
Mm.
And the same thing this time. It's a very nice space and very rare opportunity for us, at least, to do multiple gigs.
Yeah.
What I remember from the first gig that we did 7 years ago was that people were smoking so much that for me, playing a saxophone, I mean, I felt that the shit was coming down my throat all the time. So it was very hard to play. This time it was much better. Also, the music has changed quite a lot since, you know, we were here last time.
Mm. Well, so, we have now the law against smoking, but
yeah,
in
understand.
That place nobody gives a fuck.
Good, good.
Yeah, but still it seemed to be that there was less smoking than it was, you know, the last time.
So yeah,
I wasn't bothered yesterday anyway.
I'm a smoker. I did smoke a few, but not too much.
Good for your lungs.
So, yeah, you perform now as a duo. So I would like to ask you, with which kind of issues are you facing playing with each other, let's say, compared to the trio without the bassist? What are, in your opinion, the main, let's say, differences, difficulties, or little pleasure?
Little pleasure. No, I mean, it's in a way, it's easier.
Yeah.
You can take the music to some different areas, and the changes can be even more sudden.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a conversation between two persons, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, in a way, the music's developed quite a bit, of course, from the last 7 years, but it's much more free and open, I feel.
I agree with Paul that it's more open, and we can move in, you know, different directions very, very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And also, of course, because we've been known each other for quite a long time, then I sort of, you know, if he does something, I can go with him, or I can just leave him there and go somewhere else, or go against him, or whatever I can do. But it's very easy to play, you know, as a duo.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, basically, if you're improvising, the more instruments you have, the more difficult it becomes to a certain degree. So I'm not saying that we're hating our bass player, but the thing is that he's playing with a very popular Norwegian rock band. So that means that they are touring quite a lot, and we don't know exactly when he will be playing with them, and that's his first obligation. So we have sort of found out that we have to live with that somehow. And so the duo was sort of a natural thing to do.
Mm. since you've been playing now for quite a while, in your opinion, how much still there is an element of surprise on a concert when you
there
play?
There has to be. I mean, there has to be, at least my intention is, and yeah, for every show when I walk off, there should be quite a few surprises from my own playing and the other person's playing, and the interplay between the musicians that I'm with on stage. If not, it would be pointless in a way.
I felt yesterday, for example, that, which I thought was a quite nice gig, you know, musically speaking, and I thought it was nice because of all the changes that Paul, all of a sudden, he did certain things. And I think it also had to do with the fact that that room is very, very good. And when we were standing on the stage, I could hear everything that Paul was doing. And there was maybe a little buzz in his snare drum or something. I could play with that little buzz, and he didn't know what I was sort of responding to. And I felt that I could respond to more tiny little sounds than, let's say, if we were playing and we had to use a monitor system, then the choices would have been much lesser than it would be when we were playing acoustic as we did yesterday. So I think this, and also I think both Paul and I have sort of developed a little bit, hopefully, since 7 years back, and so we have a broader palette of sounds that we can use.
Speaking of broader palette of sounds, do you intentionally choose more reed instruments for the duo than you would normally for large groupings?
Good question. Well, I think, you know, when we do the duo, I think I found it useful to have, you know, the two clarinets and plus the saxophone, because when you change an instrument, it sort of naturally goes into another. It's like a new chapter in a way. But the negative side, of course, is traveling, because these days, you know, the airlines are not very helpful in terms of traveling, and it's a bit of a hassle. So I was just told Paul that I really had to rethink my whole setup and see if maybe I should try to find another way of doing it. I don't know.
There is quite a generation gap between you two, although you have been playing together for quite some time. But that must mean that you came to improvise music from possibly quite different experiences. I've read that, Frode, when you started, you were much more alone in your country. So is that true?
Oh, yeah.
Lonely wolf.
I was, you know, pretty much on my own, really. And I think also, because I was on my own, at one point I got in contact with John Stevens in England, and that was a tremendous lift for me, both on a personal level and on a musical level. And before that, I tried to get in contact with people in Oslo, and they didn't want to play with me, which is, you know, I just had to accept that. And I thought that when I started playing with John and then Johnny Diani as well, that was, you know, a fantastic thing for me, because I all of a sudden I played with really, really dedicated free musicians, whereas if I had been playing with the people in Oslo, they would have done this on the side while they were still, what they really wanted to play was like Jan Garbarek or something like that. So it was much better, actually, that they didn't want to play with me, you know.
So how important were the lone wolves for the younger generation, for you, for instance?
Yeah, if not idols, but at least, because I grew up with parents who used to run a jazz club where Frode was playing, and then when I was in my teens, Frode got in touch with me and asked me to join him in various trios, quartets, and a larger group, actually. So what should I say, the Frode Jastart School in Stavanger. I mean, but it's basically been an institution for quite a few young musicians who's chosen to move to Stavanger, or who's grown up in Stavanger and now eventually moved out. But I would say an important school in Stavanger, or Norway at all, because
let's say, yeah, 20 years ago, when I began playing music, if not improvised music, there wasn't much people of my generation interested in that music, or the generation above me. So through the last 20 years, I think it's been very important for the whole country. And then you saw 10 years ago with this club in Oslo,
yeah,
and a label got going, then the interest amongst musicians, audience and the presenters, thankfully, has increased.
Mm-hmm.
That's very much thanks to Paul, because he's been, I think when he moved to Oslo,
yeah,
he's been like really like very, well, he wanted to play that music, and he has been very important in terms of creating an audience and getting other musicians to play and things like that.
Mm-hmm. But how important do you think are also institutions? It seems to us that a lot of musicians coming from Scandinavia, mm-hmm, have a lot of, surprisingly, a lot of support from the state, either by funding or the school system that
or
is really open.
No, I mean, yeah, there's quite a lot of funding. There's a few. I mean, was it 15 years ago I went to the Music Conservatory in Trondheim for 2 years, which was a good institution in terms of the fact that there's lots of musicians there hanging out together, playing a lot, investigating time into music, but still. And they were good about, what shall I say, respecting you as musicians, what ideas you had before you entered the school.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a couple of schools in Oslo now and elsewhere in Norway. So, I mean, the support for the music, financial support as well, there's quite a few,
mm-hmm,
what shall I say, wealthy groups,
yeah,
that can go on shorter trips to all over the world doing one or two concerts and then go, mm-hmm, back again. I mean, there's two sides to it.
Yeah.
I mean, we can do the tour that we did in the US last year, yeah, 14, 15 gigs without that support.
Mm.
So in that sense, if you use the money well,
yeah,
if it's well spent, then of course.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there would be for some musician less possibility without the help of state staff? Or could that also be the danger of becoming too dependent?
Exactly.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the problem that can arise, and I mean, why shouldn't
it? Not only can arise, it is a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, people take the money for granted,
mm-hmm,
and it's not going to be there forever.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, musicians without support should be able to manage themselves as well, and then if the music's important enough, then for sure.
Yeah. How important is, in your experience, for local scene or community, the link with, let's say, community of musicians from Chicago, from Sweden, or guys like Peter Brutzmann, Evan Parker, etc.?
No, I mean, it's important for sure. I mean, there's a, it's like this pool of musicians is just growing,
mm-hmm,
but at the same time becoming tighter. I mean, mm-hmm, people are traveling a lot, meeting each other and hooking up, and there's no problem. There's not such a difference of starting a group with local musicians than a group with musicians from Chicago, Sweden, and Germany.
Mm-hmm.
It all works out, and I think the music benefits from it,
mm-hmm,
of course, and the local scenes as well. I mean, the local scene in Oslo has heard more of Chicago musicians than, yeah, any other town.
Mm-hmm.
Vice versa.
For me, one of the main quality of music coming from Scandinavia in the recent years, it seems like a very open music. People collaborating together from various fields of music, either classical, jazz, rock, electronic music, even pop. And I see it as that in there is no usual, let's say, differences of prejudice, for example, in the music of The Thing or Atomic, where rock can coexist with free jazz or bebop with free jazz, etc. Can you find reason for it?
I mean, I think it's a time when musicians and audiences checking up not just one kind of genre. I mean, people are interested, mm-hmm, in noise, metal, jazz, free improvised music, and they're being so much inspired by it or influenced that they'll actually, what shall I say, include it in their expression.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just as natural for them to, or me, to include elements from metal and straight ahead jazz music or 20s jazz music,
mm-hmm,
and in a way that's how free music should be, at least today.
Yeah,
I think that what you say is very important, because when I grew up it was much more locked into territories,
mm-hmm,
and people today they get exposed to much more, you know, big variety of music. So it's only natural, I think, to have these influences, you know, come into the music. So, for example, I have a 12-piece group where I have some younger musicians and some older musicians, and the reason why I have this the big range of age is that I want the, you know, the different tastes to come together. So you have, for example, Bobby Bradford playing with Lasse Amaro again. Lasse is an electronic guy, mm-hmm. and Bobby is, you know, played with Ornette Coleman. So when they play as a duo, it's quite interesting to see what happens, you know, mm-hmm. because they're prepared to do it. They're open to do it. Mm. And so that's why I asked them also. And I think, you know, by mixing the different genres, I think that's very good to do. Of course, sometimes it can become not so nice because it you know, sometimes it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
But generally, I find different genres they can easily mix somehow.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the duo with, or the fact that Bobby Bradford and Lasse Amaro doing a duo in this large ensemble, that would never happen 20 years ago.
No.
So quite a lot has opened.
And I don't think it would have happened in America either.
No. Mm-hmm. No. But I mean, it's also interesting because there's so much musicians and not least the audience going out, checking out different kinds of music. Mm-hmm. And there's quite a few non-musicians putting together some so-called musical instrument and playing more noise, electronica-based. Mm-hmm. kind of music, getting gigs all over. So I'm also curious to the level of criticism amongst the audience. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, the audience should be critical to what's going on as well.
Would you agree that the most problematic is still jazz audiences? I think they really have, at least in this country, mm-hmm.
problematic.
Hard time to...
You mean
in terms of crossing genres and moving to other territories?
Mean,
yeah, most conservative.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, the jazz audience or the jazz music, all of that, is quite conservative, yeah. And,
You mentioned electronic. One of the musicians that you both, I think, work with is Lasse Amaro.
Mm-hmm.
So could you tell me how different it is for you two to play with him than, for example, when you play together, or how do you adapt your musical language to electronic textures, noises, etc.? Or do you have to adapt it at all?
Well, I don't know for what it's like for Paul, but for me it's the same in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, you know, I'm relating to his sounds, his rhythms, his, you know, his whole, his expressions. And Lasse and I, we've played a few duo gigs together. And when we started doing that, I said, I want to play acoustic, I don't want to use a microphone, which means that sometimes you're going to drive over me. And I think, you know, that's fine with me. You can just go ahead, do that. I will still be playing while you're playing very loud. So all of, you know, every now and then you can hear my little sounds compared to mm-hmm. his big sounds. But, you know, I think for me, Lasse has been a very, very important musician in my life because he opened up a new territory for me. And I have, personally, I think that jazz is dead. It belongs in the museum. And what I'm talking about now is the jazz. Mm-hmm. And I think, for example, because I think the Americans are just standing on the stage repeating themselves. And I think what Paul and these guys are doing in Atomic is, you know, the way to do it,
mm-hmm.
is to use the old tradition and then, you know, rebuild it in a way, incorporate other stuff and, you know, try to find it. Because, I mean, an Art Blakey ensemble, that kind of setup, it's a very nice combination of instruments. It's a very nice, you know, starting point. And I think they've done a tremendous job with Atomic to, you know, to continue that whole tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to me that the Americans are not doing that. For example, I saw once, a few years back, I saw Christian McBride and some people at the Village Vanguard, and they were playing for a very young audience, like 20s, something like that. And they had very nice suits on, and they played the Horace Silver music, and they were behaving just like they had invented that music, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I got fucking, you know, seasick, you know,
yeah,
seeing that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's not very creative way of doing it, of taking care of that tradition. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say I think it belongs in a museum in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'd like to see some other, you know, new directions. And I don't think maybe the new direction is incorporating rap music or whatever it is. It could be, but it's, you know... But I love the idea of jazz, the idea of... Because for me, jazz is different things coming together, and you know, you boil up a new soup in a way, you know, with a new taste, and you have a little bit more pepper or whatever you want, or maybe whatever it is, put into it, and it's it becomes a different soup, but it's a soup, you know. And I actually think that, for example, with the big orchestra I have, I think there's a very obvious tradition. For me, it is an extension of what Gil Evans did, what Sun Ra did, and what Miles Davis did with these electric things. That's where we come from, I think. I think that's, you know, that's what it is. But I, you know, other people will probably say other things, but I feel that without the jazz music we couldn't have done what we're doing. But still,
I mean, one's going to continue the jazz music as if it's music that's meant for development. And then when you go to New York or whatever Village Vanguard and hear Christian McBride playing museum jazz, going backwards in time, it's pointless. And the scary thing is then that, as you were saying, there's 20-year-olds sitting there listening to it thinking, OK, is this the music of today? Or they're not informed that that's the music which is... What, 50 years old?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
And even probably more scarier is that they are taught that in conservatories.
That's also a problem with this Berkeley, where they... I mean, they don't do a single gig until they're out of that school, or they don't go and hear any music. I mean, yeah, they should get their asses out.
Yeah, I agree that. I would like to end this interview, since tonight you will perform again in Club Gromka, with a question of how important... You mentioned something about it before, in the beginning of interview, but still. How important is for you the space with its acoustics, atmosphere, crowd, noises, etc., that surrounds you for your playing in the concert?
It's what that shapes the music of the night. I mean, the audience, of course, we feed off them. They hopefully feed off what we're doing, and the acoustics,
the room,
is very important. And in this case, with the Gromka Club, it's fantastic for us to basically improvise in that room, because there's very good acoustics.
In a way, I'd say it's like almost like made for that kind of music. I think it's one of the best rooms, as far as I can remember, you know, in terms of playing.
Yeah, because you've got the whole dynamic range. You can play so soft that, I mean, unbelievably soft, and then very loud without it being unpleasant. So, yeah, there's lots of possibilities. And hopefully they keep the acoustics just as well when they're doing their refurnishing.
Yeah, me too.
Yep.
And you should spread the word about the place.
Of course.
Okay, thank you. Wish you good gig also tonight, and good stay in Ljubljana still.
Yep, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Poslušali ste intervju s dvema ključnima akterjema skandinavske improvizatorske in svobodne džezovske srenje, veteranom pihavcom Frodejem Gerstadom in mlajšim tokalcom Polom Nilsen Lovom. Skupaj bosta nocoj prizorila še en koncert v nedrjih Matere Gronke na Metelkovi ob 21. uri zvečer. Z njima se je pogovarjal Luka Zagoričnik. Intervju Radija Študent.